This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 12 for the week of December 7th, 2020. Crossover episode, part one. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I am Van Mechke, your host, and I will tell you, I have recorded this intro about 17 times, so hopefully this one will be awesome. A couple of weeks ago, I was privileged to be on the Church Sound podcast with Prentice Thompson. And it was about an hour and 45 minute conversation. We just had a blast. We really, really did. It was a lot of fun. So he sent me the audio files and was gracious enough to say, hey, you know, you can post it on Church Tech Profiles if you want to as well. So that's what I'm going to do. I am actually going to split it up into two podcasts, though, because I know that we're trying to keep these podcasts to about an hour. So since it was about an hour and 45 minutes, and it was a great discussion that he and I had, I'm going to split it up into two parts. So it'll be episode 12, which is this one right here, and also episode 13. But first, the sponsor for this episode is Renewed Vision, the folks that bring you ProPresenter. They are in their 20th year of powering lyric and video presentations of churches of all sizes. Whether it's Windows or Mac, they have an application for your church, and it's really a must-have. I've been using ProPresenter for I don't even know how long. I don't know if it's been 20 full years, but it's been pretty close, and I really wouldn't use anything else. And ProPresenter 7, which was released in January, has a ton of great new functionality like multi-screen support, dual Bible support. It also includes module functionality that was previously had to be purchased separately, but is now inside regular ProPresenter 7, such as edge blending, alpha key, and MIDI controls. One of the cool things that happened when COVID came down is that they also added video streaming directly within the software, and they also added really powerful audio routing functionality. Their latest release introduced integration with Resi, which is formerly Living as One, which is a very powerful streaming platform. So for more information on ProPresenter and all of the Renewed Vision software and applications, go to renewedvision.com. That is renewedvision.com, and we thank them so much for their support. All right, so here is part one of the crossover episode with the Church Sound Podcast. Take it away, Prentice.
Welcome to another edition of the Church Sound Podcast. I'm your humble host, Mr. Prentice Thompson, along with the pastor, Caleb Winley, who is on sabbatical. He just had he got a 5-year-old and a 3-month-old and an angry wife. You know, and I said to myself, self, you know, help that brother out. You know, he needs a little relaxation. So let him have the day off, which is great because I have a great, great guest today. And I was going to read his bio, but it's like reading the B-I-B-L-E.
Oh, that's not true. It's like, you're very kind.
It's like reading, you know, a nonfiction novel. It is.
Well, I'm an old guy, so there's a lot on there.
It's a lot on there. And to tell you the truth, all the questions, all the answers to the questions are in the bio. So I refuse to read this thing.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So let's welcome to the program, Mr. Van Mechke. Did I say your name right? Did I pronounce it right?
Mechke. It's Mechke. a very hard word. It's very hard. I don't blame anyone because, you know, you should see our mail. If you want to get a laugh, you should see our mail. So yeah, it's M-E-T-S-C-H-K-E, which is 5 consonants in a row. Only the Germans do that, which is like, I blame my ancestry. I'm like, really? Seriously? I mean, I couldn't have just been named like Jones, you know? So yeah, please do not worry about it.
Well, I'll just call you Van. That helps.
That's what everybody calls me.
I'll call you Van. Van is from the Church Tech Profiles, and we kind of found each other on Instagram.
Yeah.
Started listening to a show, and I was like, I would love to have this guy on because I think he would add another slant. And I think for both our programs.
I think so,
another slant for both our programs. And just amazing bio. Just you've hit everything and everyone just about.
Well, I just, like I said, I'm old and I've just been around a long time, you know. And I just, you know, I started doing this when I was 15, and I just kind of fell into it. Like many people, you know, I started mixing when I was in a high school church choir.
Wow.
They were dumb enough to let me like push faders and turn pots, and you know, and I didn't blow stuff up, so I guess they figured I was okay.
Yeah, didn't blow a speaker or an amp.
Yeah, and so, you know, I just kind of fell into it and did you know, and then when I was right out of high school, a friend of mine, a couple of friends of mine from church, they got a record contract with a company that was owned by Maranatha Records.
Okay.
That's back way back in the 80s. I went to a show, and their sound guy, poor guy, he's my best friend from high school's brother. So I won't even say his name, because what I'm going to say is going to sound terrible, but he was the terrible sound guy. and I heard, and I love him, but, he didn't know what he was doing clearly. And, so I told him, I said, man, you guys are awesome. You guys are great. It was like a techno pop band, you know, back in the 80s, you know, lots of synthesizers, like kind of Duran. It was like a Christian Duran kind of a thing.
Gotcha.
And, which was, you know, big back then. And so I just said, hey, you guys are great. Even though I was kind of more of a of a guitar driven kind of a guy, you know, but I really liked their music. And they said, well, hey, we're going to be playing at this Calvary Chapel down in San Diego next week. Would you come down and mix the show for us? And I'm like, sure, yeah, whatever. So drove down there and mixed, and ended up touring with them for 6 years.
Wow.
And road managed them, booked them for a while, and in that, because they were with a label that was kind of an offshoot of Maranatha, which was called Frontline. Frontline Records is still a Christian label today.
Yeah, definitely.
But this is when it first started. And so I got to meet tons of the bands there. You know, and we'd be at these shows where they'd have like showcases and they'd have like 15 groups. And, you know, I'd mix, and then somebody else would call me and go, hey, we like the way they sounded. Can you mix our thing? So I just ended up mixing a bunch of bands. But wow. I primarily was toured with them. And then when I was done with that, I worked for a small integrator. Excuse me. For those of you who don't know what an integrator is, basically is, you know, audio, video, lighting installs, here in Southern California. It was a buddy of mine. And, we also did live events. We did both. So we basically did installs during the week, and then we did live events all weekend. So it was basically a 24/7 job. It never, you know, it was just,
pretty much.
But we were young, and my wife and I, you know, we had a little kid, our first daughter, and I didn't want to tour anymore because I didn't want to be on the road with my kids, you know, with having kids. Mm-hmm. So, then I did that, and that's how I actually started mixing a lot of different groups, because we had some contracts with some local venues where we'd wrote in the sound for some local theaters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we just did a ton of stuff. I mean, like, you know, you saw the bio. We did crazy stuff, like right after Clinton Gore got elected, we did a town hall for Vice President Gore. Did a town hall. So that was my first experience with the Secret Service.
Wow.
Totally insane. And they don't have a sense of humor. Just remember that. they don't really have a sense of humor. And they're as intimidating as you think they are. Like, hands down, you're like, wow, I got to be on my best behavior.
Wow.
But I did that. And then also I did so it was like both sides of the aisle. I did Al Gore. And then a little bit later, we did a whistle stop, a train stop thing for Newt Gingrich when he was running for president.
Wow.
They literally did a train, like they stopped. They were on a train and they stopped at all the different stations. And we did the one in Burbank, California, which is outside of LA. Wow. So I did that. And then I did a ton of stuff. When Tony Bennett was coming back, when he was kind of coming back to being, you know, we did some shows with him. We did Tito Puente and the Latin Jazz All-Stars. We did just all this stuff. And it was just random, you know, whatever. And then we did tons of punk shows, thrash shows, you know, tons of Christian rock shows, festivals, reggae festivals. We used to do the Cal State San Bernardino Reggae Festival.
Okay.
We did that for a bunch of years. That was fun. Man, reggae music is awesome. Like this, I just love reggae music, and it's you know, I just love, I really liked the fact that we did so much different stuff. Like it was different. Everything was different. You know, we honestly did Lawrence Welk's orchestra one time. And then we were doing reggae, and then we were doing metal shows. And then we were
that's musical vocabulary.
Yeah. And so
which comes in handy.
Yeah. And I mixed most of those shows. I mixed on stage monitors. That was kind of my job in the company. And systems engineer. So I got a real education in that stuff. You know, everybody always goes, who'd you mix that was like super famous? Did you, you know, most sound guys mix the middle. And that's kind of what I did. You know, I was 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, you know, I mean, I mixed for people that knew that, you know, I mixed for people that had opened for Michael Jackson. I never met Michael Jackson, but I mixed for people that
had opened for Michael Jackson.
Right. So it was kind of like that, you know, so,
right.
But, amazing. And then I got involved with, one of our biggest customers, was, this little up and coming church down in Southern California called Saddleback. They were meeting in a high school, and I think they were running like 6,000 people in a high school.
Wow.
And for those of your listeners who don't know, that's Rick Warren's church.
Rick Warren's church, yes.
You know, and so they were one of our customers, and we were doing their big live events, like they do Easter outside, they do this stuff, and they didn't have a home. I mean, they were literally in a high school. And so we were doing their events, and so we did a bunch of events for them, and so they moved onto their property that their main campus is on right now to this day. The main campus is Saddleback, which is in this town called Lake Forest, but it's kind of Southern, basically down the beach, Southern California-ish. And they built this tent. So it was one of those sprung tents, you know, that has mm-hmm. the metal, but it's a tent. They built this on the property. I was telling somebody the other day, it's really funny how churches can, if they just don't care, if they only care about preaching the gospel, churches across denominations will help each other.
True.
And, they got that tent from John Wimber, who, which is the Vineyard Church, which is the Vineyard movement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They literally got that tent from John Wimber's church, which was here in Southern California too. And so they had it. They put it in storage. Rick bought it from them. They built it again. And then the company I worked for, we put the sound system in that tent. And then just through some weird circumstances that things happened, the owner of the company that I worked for, that was one of my good friends, he had a heart aneurysm in his 30s and passed away. And at that time, at that point, they were building their building that they're in now, their 3,000-seat auditorium, their main campus building. And through just some circumstances, they asked me if I would come and be their full-time audio director. And then that would be, I would mix all the services. And then basically if Rick toured or they traveled or did other events, whatever, that was kind of my job, just to be the sound engineer.
Wow.
So that was cool. That was a fun job because, it was a huge system. I remember we had the first, probably no one cares about this is listening, but you'll appreciate this. The first console we had in there was a Soundcraft Europa, which is like the biggest analog sound console ever made. It was giant. And then we downsized. Yeah. What was funny is most people won't even remember this, but if you're an old sound engineer like me, they built it, and when they put it in a case, they realized you couldn't turn it around in a truck. So it couldn't pack in a truck. It had to go sideways. So it was, apparently Soundcraft didn't think of that when they were building it. And then we got rid of that, and we bought an AMEC Recall that was really literally the first recallable console. I mean, it wasn't fully recallable. Mm-hmm. Basically what it was is you recorded it on the computer and then it would play it back and tell you where to turn the knobs to get it back where it was.
Oh.
It didn't turn the knobs.
It's like puzzles.
It told you where the knobs were. We had the Rupert Neve version, which was really hilarious because you could actually turn Rupert Neve's digital voice on, and as you turn the knob, he would tell you if you were correct.
Wow.
You'd like 1K, more, too much, back, and it's British accent, right?
Oh, gosh. So
we'd say, you know, we need to talk to Rupert tonight. So we'd turn him on, you know, when nobody's in the building.
Wow.
And that console was owned by Cub Colby. It literally had come off the Janet Jackson tour and right to us.
Wow.
And so that was really fun. And I was there for 5 years, and then I went to another church called Mariners, which is also a big church here in Southern California. I was the assistant TD there, and we built a bunch of buildings and did a ton of stuff. And the console that I had there was the console that I bought when I got there was a Paragon 2. That was okay. A great console. One of my favorite consoles. It's like a European sports car. It broke down all the time, but man, it was really fun to mix on. You had to have a whole box of spare parts. I mean, I'm not lying. We had a whole box of modules for it, because it would literally just stop working just in the middle of services and stuff. It was great.
Wow.
So I was there for 5 years, and then went on to another church locally here. And I was there for 7 years. Two churches later, I wound up at the company I'm at now. So I finally left after 20 years of full-time ministry tech. I ended up at a company called CCI Solutions. So that's like my day job. We're audio video integrator that does stuff all over the United States.
Awesome.
I'm the church relations guy. So basically that means I just get to hang out with people and see if we're right, if we're the right fit, if we can help churches. Have a lot of lunch, which I like food. So
that's amazing.
It's a good fit for me, but yeah. I've continued to mix all these years. When I was at Mariners, it's kind of like the podcast stuff was starting, and a buddy of mine who I had met through the internet through another podcast, was Mike Sessler. He started a podcast called Church Tech Weekly, which was on for 10 years and 300 episodes. And I was one of the co-hosts of that. Just ended here this last year. He just finally was like, enough, 300 episodes, we're done. So Church Tech Profiles, which is how we met. Mm-hmm. I had actually done Church Tech Profiles for about, I don't know, like 50 or 60 episodes back, like maybe 10 years ago.
Wow.
And then I got so busy I couldn't do that and do the other podcast and do my full-time job of tech directing and stuff. So I kind of put it on hiatus. And then when Church Tech Weekly was going to end, we were all kind of talking, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to start Church Tech Profiles up again.
Awesome.
So that's what we've done.
What a ride.
Yeah. So we're on, I think, episode 9, 10, something like that now. And it's just fun. It's fun to get together with people and just talk about tech and, just the struggles that people are having. And one of the things, and you and I talked about this when we talked the other day on the phone, is that, tech is a universal language in the church.
Yes.
And so it doesn't matter what color we are. It doesn't matter what denomination we are. It doesn't matter what our style of music is. I jokingly told you, I said, no one wonders what your view of dispensationalism is when you're in the tech booth, you know?
No.
And so, no. You know, that's one of the things I love about this. And, I was, super stoked to be able to talk to you and to get on the podcast. So, and what people don't know too, is that I'm actually going to broadcast this podcast on my podcast too. So it's going to reach like, you know, a lot of audiences. And
well, you know, I'm excited just about the conversation, period. Just about the conversation, yeah. Period. So what I want to do is, I want to make this.
See what happens when you make me read the bio. It's way longer than if you just
read it. It'd have been shorter if I read it. That was what you're saying.
Maybe, because you wouldn't embellish it like I do. So
no, I wouldn't have. So it's something we do every week in our podcast. We call it Sunday School. And with Sunday School, to all our new listeners out there, it's funny stories that we tell that we share amongst techs or just church folk at church.
That sounds dangerous.
That we deem funny. I'm going to save you.
I'm like, that sounds dangerous, man.
I'll get on the hot wire this week. Let's get into Sunday School. So Sunday School, my Sunday School topics. So what we normally do is I'll have three topics.
Okay.
You pick the one you want. All right.
So I can still get myself in trouble is what you're saying.
You still can get yourself in trouble.
Awesome.
All right. So the first three topics are, first topic is the lost guitar player. Okay. The second topic is what's in my wedge. The third topic is where's my lavalier?
Boy. Yeah, I have stories of all those, man. That's like mutually assured destruction, though. You got to be very careful. I'll go with what's in my wedge.
What's in my wedge?
I really want to go with the lost lavalier, but man, I can't tell those stories without really kind of nuking myself.
Okay, what's in my wedge? So I was mixing
because you don't want it because you don't want to tell stories about pastors you worked for, like because that's that.
Oh, well, I can frame it now. I can frame it. I'm a master at this. I can frame this. So if you want to go with where's my lavalier?
No, let's go with what's in my wedge.
You
I like
sure?
that.
Are you sure? You absolutely sure?
Okay, let's go. Let's go with where's my lavalier because I have a really good story and I know the pastor actually won't mind me telling it. So go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let's All right. It. So what's in my lavalier for 50? Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm mixing at an undisclosed location. All right. I'm mixing, and this is my first day mixing. It's kind of like my audition mix for this church. That show will remain nameless. And the head guy who I'm replacing is pissed off. We've gone through this. I've gone through this.
Oh, yeah.
He's a little perturbed. I don't really judge the energy too well because I'm kind of like, I'm focused on what I have to do.
And he's there. Oh, boy.
He's there. I don't know I'm replacing him.
Awesome.
This is the thing. I don't know I'm replacing him. I just know they brought me in to mix. So he's on the side. He's like maybe on to my left, stage left. And I say to him, and I'm looking at the pulpit, and I'm, you know, when the minister's about to go up, you're really just eyeballing, like, and I'm looking, and I don't see the lavalier. And I'm looking, and they're about to introduce him. So I tell him, I say, listen, I need you to go down to the stage and tell him, I don't know where his lavalier is. I think it fell down his jacket. Now I'm half screaming at him now. You need to go now, right now. Because sometimes you don't have time to go, listen, praise the Lord, God bless you. Yeah. My brother, if you could, I would graciously love you to just go and tap the man of God on his shoulder and let him know that his lavalier is missing and somehow disappeared. Could you please, kind sir, it's no time for that. They're introducing him, run down to the stage, get up there, get in his ear and say, could you please put your lavalier on, whatever.
Yes.
So he runs down, he gets in his ear, the minister looks up at me and I go, you know, I give him the hand single, the up single. He's like, thank you. So he puts it on, does his thing. The guy's mad at me. So after he gets off, after he finished preaching, he just disappears. I don't see him. And I hear, oh, God.
Oh, man. Oh, dude.
And I'm just like, and I caught it just enough, you know, I was like, ugh.
Right. You got the fader down.
Right. I got just the fader down, muted, took him out of everything. I hope no one heard that. But he was in the midst of praising the Lord in a very delicate fashion.
Yeah. There's this old movie, The Naked Gun, where Leslie Nielsen, yes, the exact same, yes, thing. Yeah, yes. That's every sound man's night. That's a nightmare.
Oh, man.
That's a nightmare.
Man. This is my audition mix.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to get that out of the way first, right? I mean, you know, just, you know, if you're gonna have that happen, it should happen on the very first day.
Man, listen, I was terrified. I was like, so, okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs, that is Sunday School. What we're going to talk about today is really tech training concepts. And you were the perfect guy. So I want this to be a two-way conversation. You ask me stuff, I ask you stuff.
Cool.
So I guess my first question from a guy who's mixing so many different venues, areas, styles of music, things of that nature. What is your training concept?
Yeah, you know, you sent this to me and I like, wow, that is such a great that's a great question. Well, the way I learned is not the way anyone should learn. Really, seriously. And so let me explain to you how I learned, and then I'm gonna explain to you how I train. Is that cool? The way I learned was basically just being thrown into the fire constantly, consistently. And having a few people on the way that were really good that like sat behind me and said, yeah, you know, here's what you do. This is what this does. You know, I mean, I would have loved to have had, I would have killed to have digital consoles back when I started. You know, I love it when I hear young guys complain about the digital consoles. I'm like, dude, we used to have to write down all the settings for every single band and then try to get it back when they actually played. There's like five bands a night. That was like a nightmare, right? And so one console, right? That's why the headliner always had a separate console.
Yeah.
Because then it didn't get jacked up, right? And everybody else just had to put up with the same console and you hope it got back to the, you know, to sound check. But, you know, I mean, I just got thrown in it and had to learn it, had to ask a lot of questions. You can't be bashful and shy when you're trying to learn this stuff.
That's a fact.
You got to be humble. You got to go, hey, I don't know how to do this. I remember telling a guy one time, I walked up to a console. It was a Gamble EX56. Look it up, young children. You will, you know, I sure they have pictures of it somewhere on the interwebs, right? But that was a big console back in the 80s. And I had never mixed on anything that big before. A lot of the pots were in reverse because it was like a British console. It wasn't zero to infinity. It was the other way around. And so I walked up and I kind of freaked out a little bit. And so the house engineer, I said, hey, look, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have never mixed on a console this big before. And it's super intimidating, but I will tell you this. I know how the band's supposed to sound. Can you help me get there? And he laughed. This is this old guy. He was probably younger than I am now. But he said, I will help you because you're the only young person that I have had come through here who's actually admitted to the fact that they didn't know what they were doing with this concert. And so that actually sparked in me, okay, that's a good way to, you know, that's a good way to go. So that's kind of how I learned about a lot of stuff. Now, I would not recommend that to anyone. Because you make a lot of mistakes and you get a lot of feedback, and I'm not talking feedback in a good way. I'm talking actual feedback. So, but the way I train, has changed over the years because it's one way you train one way on analog consoles and you train completely different way on,
on digital consoles. Digital consoles have made it so much easier to train. I mean, so much easier to train. We live in a great time right now for technology. I mean,
yes.
Technology is our nemesis and our friend simultaneously, you know.
Yes, sir.
He's technology to me is Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 1 and in Terminator 2 simultaneously. Right? So it's like the best of both worlds. But the way I used to train, the way I used to train with analog consoles is literally I would sit there and have them bring up a mix and literally stand with them, and you'd have to like share the space and talk about stuff. And it was a long, laborious process. The way I train on digital consoles is completely different, because most digital consoles now have either an iPad app or they have like an offline app, you know, that you can use, like Yamaha. It used to be called Studio Manager. Now it's called CL Studio or whatever. They keep changing the name, whatever it is. So I can be sitting next to the console with my iPad or Surface or whatever, or the computer, and I can actually kind of be, you know, get the mix up, and then I can kind of massage it and go, now I'm going to do this. Listen to that. And I'm going to pull it up and down. I'm going to change this. And they can watch it happening in real time. And that's, you know, that's kind of how I do it. I also don't ever train people live in a live situation. I mean, like, I'll train them in soundcheck and go, okay, you're going to help me get soundcheck happening. And then when the service starts, you're going to sit over here and I'm going to run service.
Right.
The other cool thing that's happened now that is awesome is, folks, if you have a digital console and you are not using virtual soundcheck, you are missing out. Virtual soundcheck is one of the greatest things to ever happen. And here's the thing: you can buy a $3,000, $4,000 Allen & Heath SQ5 and use virtual soundcheck. You can buy a Behringer X32. I would not recommend that you buy one, but you can buy one, and you can, I mean, because if that's what you can afford, that's what you can afford, right? Mm-hmm. Or Persona Studio Live or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you can use virtual soundcheck. You have a computer, you have a DAW program, and it doesn't even have to be an expensive DAW program. You could use Reaper, which is, I think the personal license is like $20 or something like that. It's really cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can plug that in to any of these consoles, and you can record and play back. And consoles now, the first generations of consoles, like I remember the first time I used virtual sound check was on a Yamaha M7, a CL. You had to do all this, you had to actually create a separate scene that would change the head amp control. And there was all this stuff you had to do. But now all of them, you just push a button and you just go virtual sound check, beep, and it changes everything.
Right.
So I can sit there with somebody and I can just play the snare drum for 2 hours and we can literally walk through, okay, this is how a snare drum should sound. This is what we're doing with the snare drum, and talk about compression and talk about, you know, gates and talk about all the dynamics. And if you've got plugins, if you've got Wave Sound Grid, you can do all that, and you can do it over and over and over again with virtual sound check. I mean, man, I don't know about you, but I mean, you probably learned on analog consoles too, right? And
I got thrown into the fire. So my story is, I moved to Virginia, and my listeners probably have heard this story. I moved to Virginia, and my younger brother was a youth minister at a church. And because I was a music producer, when I came into town, he would always brag about me to his pastor. So when I came into town, the first thing he did was try to talk to me. So he says, hey, listen, I want you to kind of consult me. My sound is off like every Sunday. It's different. So he said, can you, and it was like three services, it was like 12,000 member churches, big church. And so I pretty much just kind of wrote down what I saw and what I was experiencing. I handed it to him after 4 weeks, and I said, "Well, listen, this is your problem. What you need is you need too many cooks in the kitchen. You need one guy and an assistant, and you just give everybody other jobs in the ministry, or you got to let some people go." It's one of the
You picked your own poison. And you didn't even know it.
I didn't know it. So basically, he looked at the paper and he goes, "How come this can't be you?" And I said, I should have been nervous, but I wasn't. I was like, "Well, I never thought of it." And the next thing I know, like, the operations guy walks in and he says, "Hey, put P on the mix on midweek service." I never mixed before. I don't want to make this perfectly clear. I never mixed before.
So you were just standing there doing a critique of what was going on.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I never mixed before, and they had a Mackie. No. It was a Soundcraft G series.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. Good old Soundcraft G series.
Man. And I love the sound of that thing. So yeah. I get in front of the mix and I literally look at the console, and it was definitely God, because I looked at it and I understood everything. It was like, because I knew nothing about it, except from making records and, you know, being up at record labels and being in the studios mixing. But I was an engineer, I was producing. So I just kind of innately, I guess I was downloading all this information, understand compression and limiting and gating and, you know, what different plugins do. And I just looked at the console and I understood everything. And then from that point, I mixed and I was the head engineer at this 12,000 member church.
That's awesome.
And then they got
That's a great story.
Then they got a Yamaha digital deck. I forget which one it was. And I talked them into moving the whole console to the floor. And he listened to me. And that console's still there to this day. And
yeah. In those days, that was probably either M7 or a PM5.
It was a PM5
or PM1D, yeah.
No, it was a PM1D. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's the big boy. Yeah. That's the original giant Yamaha.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think it was a beast.
So this was like 2006.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
That's when I first started mixing. And then from that point, people start bringing me in the mix.
Right.
And that's pretty much how it started. And for me, it was my musical gift was allowing me to hear what I needed to hear. Because in the studio, you're trying to perfect something that's over and over and over. What I loved about mixing front of house is that you was on the seat of your pants all the time. And I love that. Yeah. And I love that energy. Like, I love being in front of the desk and going, "Woo, let's go. I can't wait. Like, I'm revving to go." Anytime I mix, I'm so excited. I'm like a kid in the can. I can't wait to be on the seat of my pants.
Well, you know, it's really funny because many years and years ago, when I was with bands that were on record labels, I went into the studio just a couple of times, and I would sit there, and this is back in the tape days, you know, multi-track. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember them going, you know, they do a take, it's like a guitar track. They do a take, and the producer would look at the engineer. They look at each other and they go, "What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think?" And I'm thinking, I'm just sitting back there and I'm not saying a word, but I'm just thinking, well, actually the best take was four takes ago, but now the guitar player's worn out. You taped over that and you'll never get it back.
Right.
And it kind of taught me, I said, you know, one of the things I love about live is there's this energy and this tension that we have to do everything we can to get it as good as we can in that pass.
Right now.
Right. And we're never going to have, never going to have that moment again. And that's exciting. You know, a buddy of mine was the tech director for a theater, like an actual theater, performing arts theater. And in the control room above the windows, it said, "There's no second chances in theater." and live theater. There's no second chances in live theater. And I always thought, well, that is exactly why I like to do live production. Because I like the fact that I actually have to make it happen. And if something goes wrong, I've got to troubleshoot whatever and just keep going. I also found out that, you know, and something I tell, going back to training a little bit, one of the things I tell engineers when I'm trying to, when I'm training sound people is if you make a mistake, the important thing is that you fix it as quickly as possible and just move on, because most people won't remember the mistake unless it gets pointed out.
That's true.
Like I always tell pastors, and I didn't do this at the beginning because I didn't have the confidence, but one of the things that Rick Warren was really good about is he never panicked on stage. Does not till this day. I don't, it's just inherent in him as a person. He doesn't panic. Things go wrong. We've had power failures. I had the 16 volt rail go out on the Europa, the Soundcraft Europa, and on an analog console. What that did was it made all of the mic pre's go full, like 100. Ooh. And so, and it was happening right when he was preaching, right? So I was kind of in, you know, I mean, this was probably, we did, at that time we did 5 services a weekend. I don't remember which service it was. But you know, I mean, after like 4 services, once the preacher's up there, you're a little bit on autopilot, you know, you got your hand on the console, but you're relaxed.
Right.
And he started getting louder and I was like, what is going on? And I'm looking and, nothing's moved. And I'm like, what is happening? So I had the presence of mind to grab the main faders, because at least the band wasn't up there. It was just him. I had the presence of mind to grab the main faders and start pulling them down until it kind of leveled out. And I'm like, I didn't know what was happening. And I just happened to look down at the Soundcraft power supply and only one light was on it. Wow. Instead of all the lights. And I'm like, oh, that's bad. That's not good. And so I sent our stage manager up to, I said, you need to run out at the end of the service and tell Rick that there won't be a closing song. Because I just lost all control of the sound console. So which he did, and he just said, hey folks, we're running over, you know, go in peace. You know, let me pray for you and we'll exit out. They didn't know. And luckily it was the last service of the morning. So I was okay. And at the time we didn't have a redundant power supply for that console. So we bought one. They were really, they were custom built or whatever. I don't remember what it was. It was a really weird thing with that console, but he didn't sweat for 1 second. He just went with it. Wow. And I just learned that. So I would always tell pastors after that, look, if something bad happens, please don't point it out. Know that we're back here. We're trying to fix it. We're going to do everything we can to fix it. You know, I'm very respectful to the pastor, but I would say respectfully, if something goes wrong, trust me, we know it's happening and we're going to do what we can to fix it as quickly as possible. Please don't, you don't have to point it out. One of the reasons that I don't like doing that is because I believe that one of the worst things a pastor can do, and now I'm going to sit up, I'm just stood up on my soapbox if you guys can't see me. one of the worst things a pastor can do is call out a technical volunteer from the stage.
And that's happened to me.
Because here's why. Most technical people are more introverts anyway. You know, they're not extroverts. I'm like you're an extrovert, I'm an extrovert, but we are completely in the smallest percentile of technical people. Okay. Yeah. And so I always say I'm in the 3% of extroverts mm-hmm. that's in technical, you know. And but if you call them out, I've had people leave the ministry, the volunteer ministry, because they got called out from the stage. And I'm like, these folks are plumbers and mail carriers and grocery store workers, and they're not professional videographers or sound mm-hmm. engineers or lighting directors or whatever.
Yeah, they fill in a position.
Right. And they do this because they love the church and they like technology. And if you call them out, they're done. They're like, I'm not getting paid. I don't need to be embarrassed in front of, you know, 500,000, 2,000 people, whatever. 200 people, 100 people, 20 people, doesn't matter.
Right.
So now I'll step down off my soapbox, but that's something I say, look, we're fixing it and just keep going. Just keep going. And I found that if you keep going, nobody knows for the most part.
That's true.
I mean, unless
that's just horrendous.
Yeah. Unless the power goes out, but then you got a whole other problem. And I mean, we did a service at Saddleback one time. We were having really bad rainstorms here and, we had the power go out. And so we literally put, two JBL powered Eons on each corner of the stage. This is in a 3,000 seat auditorium.
What?
Yeah. Cause there were these, if those of you have never seen Saddleback's main building, there's like 65 feet of windows on either side. So if there's the sun's out at all, it's very bright in there. And it's almost like being outside, and which our lighting guys always hated, but hey, it is what it is. And so, but anyway, so it was daytime and it was light. And so we literally did, Rick Mutchow, who was the worship pastor at the time, literally parsed the band down immediately, like parsed it down to like acoustic, maybe a couple of keyboards and the singers. And we basically did the entire services with, four portable speakers in a 3,000 seat auditorium, and we did it. And you know what? I mean, Rick came out and explained it, and people still wanted to have church, but there was no power, and we did it, which, you know, makes sense because I mean, we've only had live production with power for, you know, 100 years maybe. Mm-hmm. And the gospel's been being preached for 2,000 years.
Yes, sir.
So we're fooling ourselves if we think that the gospel has to have technology. Mm-hmm. And yeah. This is coming from a guy who loves technology, right. You know, but you know, so you got to do what you got to do and, you know, you just keep going.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, my big thing with training is that you just, and we were talking about this before, so let me jump to the whole thing about, I tell people all the time, I'm much more concerned with how it feels to the audience than if it's precisely correct sound wise.
Yes.
Cause like we were talking earlier, you know, and you said, save that cause I want to record it. But the truth of the matter is there's very few people in the audience going, yeah, man, if you could just put more shimmer in that kick drum, you know, right. then I'd be right. able to worship.
Right.
Nobody's saying that, you know,
just so, us in the audience.
Just us. We're the ones saying that. Yeah. If you and I are in the audience,
my wife looks at me. She can tell if I'm sitting in the audience, if something's bad. And I'm just like, yeah. You know, almost like praise the Lord, not the sound, you know?
Right. Well, you know, it was really funny for years. My wife, when we'd go to concerts, my wife would go, no talking. No, there's no talking in this concert. Cause I don't want, but then what happened, we've been married, I have an amazing wife. We've been married for 37 years and she's been with me this whole time. Now she's the critiquer.
Oh gosh.
She goes, we went to church this morning and you should have heard the thing, you know, and she starts telling me this whole thing. And now my daughters do it too. They're like, oh dad, the sound was so terrible at this thing. It was so awful. And I'm like, oh,
you created some monsters. Yeah,
I created some monsters. I shouldn't have done that, you know, but you know, it is what it is. And so, when I left church ministry and came to work for the company I work for now and just got to sit in church, mm-hmm. which is something I hadn't got to do for 20 years, just sit in church with my family. It took me about a year before I could relax.
Get out your head.
Yeah. And luckily what we did is we went to a church here that our company actually does all the AV for, and they have a really great technical director, tech staff, amazing tech staff. And so when I go to church there, it actually sounds and looks good. So it doesn't bother, you know, so I'm like, maybe I wouldn't have made that choice on the snare drum or maybe that one vocal is too loud or whatever, but it's not, you know, it's not enough to make me go insane. And so that's actually good. I mean, but I go to some churches to train still to this day. And or to do what you did. You know, a lot of times people will hire us and they'll say, hey, you know, before we do a project with you, would you mind coming in and just hanging out in the service and kind of maybe tell us, you know, what our problems are, what you see, yeah. What you see, you know, and wow, I've seen, like you, I've gone to some service and gone, okay, yeah, your technology is not in good shape, but you got a lot of other problems.
Yeah.
You got programming problems. You got mm-hmm. people problems. You mm-hmm. got, you got all kinds of problems, and we can fix your technology, but we can't fix your people problems. You got to fix that, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, but yeah. So I, the, for as going back to training, you know, I believe in a couple of things. One, I believe in training people when in non-mission critical things first. Mm-hmm. And then slowly moving them into the mission critical things, but always being there to be clear about what my expectations are, what's important to me. You got to be very communicative when you train people to do audio. And the bottom line is audio is so subjective.
That's so true.
You know, I mean, you and I could sit right next to each other at a show and then we could go out for pancakes afterwards and talk about what we liked and different like, and you're a pro and I'm a pro and we are going to come away with completely different things.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with my opinion. There's nothing wrong with mm-hmm. your opinion. It's right. just, we have a perspective of whatever. And so training people, because I have a lot of friends that I certainly respect and I've heard them mix and I've said, I would have done this or I would have done that. I mean, but the mix was great. Wasn't my cup of tea, but it was great.
Right.
So, you know, it's hard. I mean, and please folks, when you're, let me say this. If you're a sound person in a church and you know, you learned in that church, which is most sound people in churches, they got in ministry at the church they're at right now and they're mixing at that church. Mm-hmm. Cut yourself some slack. Please cut yourself some slack. It is not an easy job. You have a lot of things to think about and a lot of people to please. And there's a church in Tulsa called Church on the Move. And the pastor there, Whitney George, said something many years ago at one of their big conferences that I've really stuck with me. And he said he stole it from somebody else, but I've only heard it from him. He said, it is ridiculous to think that you can do in your spare time what others have devoted their lives to.
Man, that's good.
And so I'm not saying that's not a put down. It's just cut yourself some slack. Yeah. You have a full-time job. You got family, you got kids. So for people like, you know, Prentice and me, we've been doing this for a long time. Music has been our life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to walk in and probably be able to pull up a mix a whole lot faster than you are. I should be able to. That's not that's what we do. Don't judge yourself by that standard. You know, do the best job you can. And I'll tell you what, for me, attitude and fitting into the culture.
Huge.
And wanting the best for what you're doing is way more important than being precise in your mix.
That's true. That's true.
So, you know,
that's true. What I found is like when I go to churches and they bring me in to train, is that I take a holistic approach. So what I do is I'll tell them, I said, listen, let me come in during the week and for a service. Don't tell nobody I'm there. Let me come see rehearsal. Let me come when everyone's relaxed and you're trying to work through your songs and all the musicians are there. So I can kind of judge personalities. You know, I can kind of see who talks to who and why they talk, what they talk about, what songs are more aggressive, who's the lead singer, why, where they hold the mic, do they cup the mic, all those things, you know, you find out when people are relaxed. Yeah. Then I want to see how you guys sound check. I want to see who shows up on time. I want to see if it's a mandate you guys are on time, or do you guys just walk in and sing? You know,
right? You know? Yeah.
You know, yeah. You have one of those churches. you know? Yeah. And then I want to sit in the service and I want to see, how does your minister minister? Mm-hmm. Is he aggressive? Does he use a lavalier? Does he use a handheld?
Right.
Does he have the right handheld? Because I've seen churches where the pastor had like a super cardioid and he's doing this stuff. And he's off axis. Mm-hmm. And you go like, well, listen, what mic do you have? And he's like, oh, it's a Sennheiser's E945. I said, well, we should have got him a 35.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because but we know that stuff. So I like to soak the information in. And then when I find out after all of that, I found out that I just can't train the audio team.
Right.
I gotta train the pastoral staff. I gotta talk to the musicians. I gotta get everybody to speak the same language. Mm-hmm. The same common goal, everyone here wants this to be excellent. Yeah. Everyone here has the same common goal of being able to usher in the Spirit of God through excellence, through your gifts. That's what mm-hmm. we're all here for. You're here to preach, you're here to play and sing, we're here to make all that sound beautiful.
And we're going to stop it right there, and you'll get to hear the second half of the Church Sound podcast that I did with Prentice Thompson in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. Please go over to our social media, which is Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and Church Tech Profiles, and like and subscribe, all those good things that you do on the socials. You can send me an email at van@thesoundbooth.com or hit me up on all the social media messaging. That's cool too. Please go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review and also give us some good words of encouragement. That would be awesome. If you want to get in contact with me, like I said, through the website or through the social media stuff. Anyway, be good to each other. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Have a good one.